Saturday, July 20th, began early with work on the park across the river. Three National Park Service men, Mr. Carl Dagan, who had come to work on a script for a movie, which would be an exhibit in the little visitor's center across the river, Mr. Mark Sagan and Mr. Bright, who were going to look at the operation of the little house in Johnson City and begin thinking about the possible acquisition of it by the National Park Service sometime next year after we are out of office. These three had spent the night at the Cedar House, and the day was to be given to park work. Also, they will all absorb an impression of the whole ranch, because someday down the road, 10, 20 years, who knows when, we would hope to turn over the whole thing to the National Park Service in the way that President Eisenhower has. After my first cup of coffee, I called them. They had breakfasted, so I picked them up, and we drove into Johnson City. Jesse Hunter took us through the house. It was not yet time for the tourists to come in, but already cars were parked thickly around the sides, and the three men seemed impressed when I told them that the 200,000th person had passed through the house. I believe it was one day last month. I had called him on the telephone to hope that he was having a nice vacation and that he enjoyed seeing the house. It turned out, amazingly, that his name was Nixon, and he had a daughter named Pat. How could you pull him out of 200,000? They seemed impressed also that last evening, as they had passed the house, there were three cars parked in front, trailers, each from a different state. As we sat in the little parlor and had a cup of coffee, and I told them of how Lucia and I had put it together, I noticed a waiting tourist swinging patiently in the porch swing. And Jesse told us of how this spring there had been some quite new behavior, people putting their blankets down on the lawn under the trees and letting their children rest there, maybe giving the baby a bottle or having their lunch. But she reported no real problems in running the house. One of the things I was most relieved about was that when and if the National Park Service takes over the place, they will be happy to put into civil service Jesse and any personnel employed there now. We drove briefly around Johnson City and then back to the ranch, entering the park from the Highway 290 side, stopping to walk around the old log cabin, surveying the views, talking about nature trails, taking a couple of peaches off the trees. They were delicious. And then getting a call from Linda. She was leaving by plane for Houston with Joe, and in a hurry because of bad weather. So we drove home, and I hugged her goodbye at the airport. Joe, that reliable friend, an escort for a weekend at Astro World, is staying with the man's. And then Betty Weinheimer, whom I'd already phoned, arrived. We went through the birthplace. Here, we listened to the tapes, the first time I had heard them. And once more, we drove in through a group of tourists who had their cameras out and were clicking away, just as they'd been at the little house in Johnson City. There, some of them had called me by name, young ones squealing with excitement, and I had asked where they were from and whether they were having a good summer vacation. The bend the hemisphere, a brief, pleasant exchange, and lots of pictures, and Mr. Dagan, Sagan, and Bright, I thought, seemed a trifle surprised and pleased. We were all overwhelmed at the amount of visitors that had gone through the birthplace this summer. I believe it was 1,600 that Betty had had on one record Sunday. They were highly complimentary of the tapes, the fact that we had them, that is, and the script itself. They thought the mechanical quality was awful, and that I should record them again inside. These I had recorded, as I remember, in the dog trot of the little house itself, in order to get in the atmosphere of the thing. Inwardly, I gave myself a pat that they existed at all. It was one of the little steps forward I have taken, and I will get them done better. And back at the main house, we had lunch. Betty and Juanita and Mary, the three men and I. Soufflé and bacon and ham. Wonderful fresh tomatoes from the garden. And peaches that may have been from the little orchard we own or from one of our neighbors. And I enjoyed that oddly satisfying pleasure of the landsman who says, "These came off the place." After lunch, Mr. Sagan and Mr. Bright went back into Johnson City to see that house in operation with tourists going through. Their interest, response, to listen to the tapes there, asked Jesse some more questions. Mr. Dagan and I toured the ranch with Dale and talked about cattle and grasses. And then I came home for 2 hours of lying in bed and recording and making telephone calls and left them to their own work while I watched out the window a beautiful storm come up. Great roiling black clouds and thunder and lightning, a magnificent show. Finally, a lashing of rain, but short. The corn is tall and green beyond the fence, and we'll have roastnears for supper tonight. It's a beautiful prospect right out one's bedroom window. The pink crepe myrtle, our own, which we planted back 14 to 15 years ago, are full of pink bloom. The white crepe myrtle, alas, has not had a single blossom. The daylilies, which were so beautiful in June, every shade of yellow and orange into bronze, are just about spent, but they were a great June show. I am more and more satisfied with my bedroom window. At 6, I got up, the storm was over, I picked up our 3 men, and we toured the dance. Fast surprisingly, it was too muddy. We almost stuck, and so we went around in the Martin, and the deer raced along beside us and all the little dappled fawns. It was one of those glorious summer evenings. The storm was spent, and the air itself a caress. And then I got word that the president was calling me, and I went back to the ranch and took the call. It was Jim Jones on Air Force One, saying that they were en route home and would be here a little before 10. We picked up Juanita and Mary and drove over to the Scharnhorst. And I told Mr. Deegan all about the film that we had in the can of the president and me climbing on the rocks of my tour of the house. Tony Loeb. Every now and then he saw a spot where his crew, who had come down to shoot wildflower scenes, had worked. And finally, we saw the antelope. 2 in one pasture, 7 in another. That means at least one baby. They are the most graceful, the most delightful of all the inhabitants of the ranch. We discussed the format of the movie. The scenario is gestating in his mind. He will use everything that we have in the can that fits. He wants very much to be able to shoot some more, possibly in September, of the family at the ranch. Dark drove us in. We had a real midsummer dinner, much of it from the garden. Fresh corn and green beans, roast, and Mary's inimitable cornbread. And the men left a little before 10, and I went out to the airport to meet Lyndon. It's odd the way I live insulated from the world here when he is not here. I never turn on the TV. I do not have a paper, but with him, the world returns and the newspapers. He came swinging down off the plane, always glad to get back. It had been a good trip, he said. He seemed reasonably satisfied. Tia was a very good man, as cooperative as he could be, caught in all the tides of demands of his own countries, his allies, the enemy. We went swimming. Water was a marvelous temperature, just like a caress. And we lay there, floating and looking up at the stars, and talked and rested. It was just about 11 o'clock Saturday night, and Lyndon had left for Honolulu at 11 o'clock Thursday morning, had traveled thousands of miles, lived through hours of conferences of sensitive, demanding, pounding decisions. And here so quickly he was back. What will it be like when January comes and there is a surcease from all this? I thought of the stories the Park Service men had told at dinner about the Indian pictographs on the cliffs down in the Amistad Dam area, and how for over 2 years I've tried to get down there to see them. Of their trip out to the Cascade Mountains, the most magnificent part of this country, they say, and still wilderness. And I thought of my last phone call from Tony, telling about his packing trip up to the mountains with his 2 grandchildren. All of those things for me have allure. To 10, crowding into these 2.5 days, thousands of miles, and a pounding of work and decisions, what will it be like in January? A surcease from these. I went to bed thinking about all the Park Service men's stories, of looking at the Indian pictographs in the Amistad